News time 8:06. Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta. Traffic is smooth across the Wasatch Back this morning. Just looking on the UDOT map, seeing some slight backups on those for those on I-80 heading eastbound towards the US 40 interchange. There's some slight backup there, but everything else seems to be moving quite well. We're currently sitting around 60 degrees across the Wasatch Back, mostly sunny, partly cloudy skies. But there is a chance for some storms later today. On the phone with me now, I've got ABC4 meteorologist Nate Larson to tell us more about the weather. How's it going, Nate?
We do have showers and thunderstorms moving in from the south today. So south flow bringing up some monsoon moisture, some remnants from Tropical Storm Alberto. The further north we go, the less of a threat of storms. So most of the areas we're watching, primarily the Wasatch Back, maybe just a little bit too far west. The western Uintas, areas southeast of there and east of I-15 have a good chance of storms today. But there is still a threat for Park City, not going to be a washout of a day. Temperatures in the upper 70s, but ice to the skies this afternoon because we could see some of those storms pop up throughout the late afternoon and evening. Into the weekend, nice weather shaping up as well. Mostly sunny skies are expected, some high clouds at times, but mid-80s for Park City, upper 80s for Sunday. Overnight lows will be in the 50s, and we're going to kind of hang out in those mid to upper 80s into next week with high pressure kind of being the main feature of the forecast through at least midweek. So temperatures remaining a good 10 degrees or more above average. Could see a stray shower or two pop up in the higher elevations. So possibly on Wednesday, a slight chance of a shower or storm. And on Thursday in Heber, highs today in the mid 80s, also a chance of thunderstorms. Plan on mostly sunny skies taking over Saturday afternoon. We will likely wake up to a few clouds on Saturday morning. Sunshine on Sunday, temperatures climbing over the weekend to the mid to low 90s, and we're going to hang out in the mid 90s in Heber throughout much of next week. In fact, 94 on Monday, 96 on Tuesday, with mid 90s Wednesday and Thursday. A stray shower or two possible by the middle of next week in Heber as well.
All right. Thanks, Nate. Have a good weekend.
You bet. You too.
Coming up, we'll be talking with musician Sonia Richens, who will have details about the Wild Heart Sanctuary benefit concert next week. Then we'll talk with Park City Mayor Nan Worrell. She'll have a recap of last night's city council meeting, which included the approval of the city budget. We'll end the hour with Utah Highway Patrol Lieutenant and PIO Cameron Roden. He'll have what drivers need to know about the state's new road rage law. Then stay tuned for Fresh Tracks Friday at 9. Each Friday, 12 new songs are added to our library and introduced at the top of every hour. This week, we have fresh tracks from Megan Trainor, Lovely the Band, and Mark Broussard. Getting into some local news, the Heber City Council is developing a plan to bring more affordable housing to the area. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports, city leaders discuss how it can get a portion of the billions Utah has now set aside for affordable homes.
Heber leaders say they want to do what they can to address unattainable home prices in the city. In the most recent legislative session, lawmakers sought to give them and other Utah municipalities another tool to incentivize affordable development. House Bill 572, which passed in March, allocates $3 billion to small regional builders for housing developments. Under the terms of the bill, at least 60% of the new homes must be deed restricted for a minimum of 5 years. Steve Waltrip, Governor Spencer Cox's senior advisor for housing strategy and innovation, spoke with council members Tuesday about the state's housing crisis and how the new legislation is meant to help. He says the housing crunch could have dire consequences for Utahns.
The greatest threat to our future as a state, as a nation, is the loss of opportunity.
Waltrip says home prices have soared far beyond what's reasonable for most Utah residents. Median home prices used to be about triple the median household income. Now, home costs are about 6.5 times higher than salaries.
We will wait a long time before wages catch up to home prices, for it to go back to 3-1.
On top of that, Waltrip says homeowners aren't moving due to rising interest rates, so there's little turnover in the market. He says deed-restricted housing is one tool to improve the state's outlook, and the new law puts some control in city leaders' hands. Waltrip says the local emphasis is a key aspect of the law because communities know their own needs.
But if you can guarantee that these are going to be homes that your teachers and your firefighters and your workers can live in and be a part of your community, that's what you want.
Councilmember Scott Phillips says he likes the law's requirement for owner occupancy to prevent affordable housing from turning into short-term rentals.
You know, I'm trying to help people out. I'm not trying to enrich them. And now when they sell their home, they're coming back on the market as VRBOs and Airbnbs.
It's up to the city to manage the terms of the deed restrictions. It can make the period longer than 5 years or the percentage of affordable homes higher than 60%. The new law also permits cities to create a 10-acre home ownership promotion zone. That would allow cities to get a tax increment for infrastructure improvements if homes in the zone meet certain density requirements and sell at 80% of median income. Waldrip says the goal of the legislation is to foster more economic diversity in Utah cities.
This is growth with intent to enrich and enhance communities.
The discussion at Tuesday's meeting was for the council to learn more about its options with the new law. Council members will continue to work with Waldrip to brainstorm how to implement the legislation in Heber developments. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Just a PSA for those in the Main Street area tomorrow. Savor the Summit is going on. That will shut down Main Street beginning at 6 a.m. on Saturday. Parking will be removed from the east side of Main Street for deliveries and events set up. And then beginning at noon tomorrow, Main Street will close entirely from top to bottom. There is free parking for the event at Richardson Flat. The city is running free public transit every 20 minutes, 10 a.m. until midnight tomorrow for Savor the Summit visitors. China Bridge will have $9 an hour parking rate with a max of $40, and that runs from noon to 10 p.m. There's plenty of private lots around Old Town. Drop and Load is in South Marsac, the Brew Pub lot, and Bob Wells Plaza. Taxis are also advised to drop off in the Bob Wells Plaza. You can find more information about this logistical information for Savor the Summit at parkcity.org. In studio with me now, I've got Sonia Richens from the Wild Heart Sanctuary. How's it going this morning, Sonia?
Really, really good, Parker. Thanks.
Yeah, and so we're having you in today. You guys are holding a little benefit concert next week, but I think before we get into that, why don't you give our listeners just some background on what Wild Heart Sanctuary is?
Okay, so we actually started the sanctuary up here in Park City 11 years ago, and we're in the Silver Creek area. And what we do is we are herd, we call it the Wild Heart Herd. They're actually rescued wild horses that had been rounded up by the Bureau of Land Management and kept in government holding pens. And we get the ones that are higher risk, where they're injured or old, or, you know, they're just high risk of not being adopted from the BLM when they do that. So yeah, they're all at the sanctuary and it's their forever home, and we just love on them. We don't break them or anything. We just let them live their entire lives out at the sanctuary forever.
Yeah. And what would you say inspired you to kind of chase after that mission?
Okay, so it started in 2005 when I got what they call wild horse fever. Mm-hmm. So I found out from the Humane Society, they were sending me information on wild horses and showing how they were rounding them up and sending them right to slaughter. And I was completely traumatized. I couldn't believe it was happening. And so back then in the olden days, 2005, there wasn't any social media. Mm-hmm. There was nothing. So I went out and I thought, how can I spread the word? And I'm like, I'll go out and I'll raise money and I'll do a documentary. So that's how it all started. And so I raised money and got this film team together from the University of Utah, and we produced a 26-minute short called Mustango, and it viewed up here in Park City at Sundance Inn. It's a 26 short. So yeah, in 2008, I think it was
cool.
Up here. Yeah,
yeah,
that's how it started. Yeah.
Yeah, and just in the 11 years you've been here, how has it grown? You know, what are you maybe offering or doing that you weren't previously doing?
Yeah, and so once I moved up here to Park City and got the sanctuary, so we started with 4 well Mustangs, and now we're up to 9, and we call it the Wild Heart Herd. And what we do is that it's not only a sanctuary and a refuge for wild horses, but it's also a place where people can come, do yoga, we do art classes. We just did a Western Lion dance class that was a blast. And we do like crystal bowls, all that fun stuff too, and nature walks. So it's a place we open up for humans, not only four-leggeds, but two-leggeds to come and really relax, be in nature, and be in the presence of the magical horses. They're so healing, and they just help you ground. And we all need a pause now. Yeah, mm-hmm. We all need to pause and get in nature. So I think it's just beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I understand you all are hosting a benefit concert. That's next week on the 26th, I believe. What can you tell me about that?
Yes, so next week on Wednesday, the 26th, we're hosting a benefit concert, but we call it a fun, like fundraiser, because we want to have fun too when we do it and celebrate the wild horses, you know. So Cactus Buds is going to play. They're an acoustic duo here in Silver Creek, and they play all around, and they're amazing. They're going to do a lot of fun cover songs and some of their own original stuff. And then we'll also have some really good silent auction objects, and then we're going to do support a horse type thing where you can sign up to support a horse monthly for a year, and it will do it privately where you can just decide what amount you want to support the horse with, but that will really help us too. And so, and our big thing is we need to buy 1400 bales of hay for the horses. So the hay alone's around $22,400, and that's just the hay. So that's our goal, to at least get enough for the hay. So it's peace of mind, you know.
Has inflation hit hay too?
Not bad. Three years ago, yes. Now it went down a little more. So we get grass hay only because they're wild mustangs. So they call them easy keepers, so they have to eat low sugar hay. And yeah, we contract out of Colville every year, mm-hmm. and so he keeps it really good pricing for us. So that's
and that's
good.
All just food for the horses, or does
yeah,
that serve any other purpose?
That's the hay's the food. And then we also do a lot of like supplements. I try to keep everything really holistic and you know, imitate nature as close as I can, like with indigenous herbs and everything like that. So we also give them herbs. And we right now we have four, we call them AARP, wild mustangs. So we call them the always awesome retired ponies. So AARP. So they're getting into their senior years. I know. I'm so clever. No, but, and so they have a lot of extra care. Like today, my veterinarian's coming over, and we need to, you know, shoots a steroid shot in my lead stallion's knee. His knee was actually... his name's Cocapelli. His story's amazing. Do you have time for me to tell
Coke's
story?
Yeah, let's hear about
Cocapelli. So Cocapelli was sold illegally to the really rough rodeos on the Mexican border right after he was rounded up by the BLM. And so he was trucked around for 4 years and with the rodeo with other stallions and everything. And finally they beat him up so bad they put him in a... They put him in a kill pen to be sold for slaughter. And my friend saw him at a slaughter auction and rescued him. And he was so beat up. So 4 years he was with other stallions. He probably never even slept. And so what he did is he got out of her trailer, and he went and he just walked out of her trailer, and he fell down to the ground and started dying, like totally done with this earth. And she had a veterinarian come over, and he's like, he's not going to make it. We doubt he'll be here tomorrow. And she ran a pony club, and so four pony club girls went and said, can we just go lay by Cocapelli and love on him? And she said, sure. And they laid by him and they petted him and they said, you're so special and we love you. And, you know, just loved on Coke, who'd never felt any love in his whole life, just abuse from humans. And his heartbeat came back. I usually cry when I tell this, I'm sorry. But his heartbeat actually came back. And now he's our lead stallion at Wild Heart Sanctuary. Right. But we do, you know, have a lot of upkeep on him because he had a torn Achilles tendon and a blown out knee when we got him. And yeah, he's been there 11 years and he's been a survivor and he's still lead stallion. But yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe just more general for people that don't know about, you know, the wild horses in the West. What should people just understand in basic terms about how the BLM manages these animals?
All right. So the Bureau of Land Management is supposed to be managing the horses and keeping them at a number that is doable on their land. They're called herd management areas. And right now, they've been culling the horses down and rounding them up to such a low count that they're really nearing, like they're on the verge of extinction. And then once they round up, they're taking the mares, and they're putting sterilization in them, IUDs. They're castrating the males, the ones they put back out. So it's almost genetically inviolable to breed in that situation. So that's what's going on with the management of the horses now. In Lander, Wyoming, they're doing a roundup with 3,000 horses. It's breaking my heart because they're going to wipe that out. And after that, they're going to bring 55,000 head of cattle in. So it's just, since my documentary, it's not changed. It's only gotten worse. I was investigating, you know, behind the scenes of what's going on. And it's only gotten worse. So we really need to be a voice for these horses. They don't have a voice right now. Yeah.
Do you feel across the West that there are a lot of other organizations similar to Wild Heart doing similar work?
Yes, and there's a lot of people that are being the horse's voice. So, yeah, and there are. And when I started in 2005, there was like three of us, and now there's hundreds internationally everywhere trying, you know, being the voice for these horses because they don't have a voice. And if you go on my website, is it okay if I say my website? So it's wildheartsanctuary.com. There's an Act Now area. So you can go and act and say, you know, you want these roundups to be more humane. They're very abusive in the roundups. And also there's a SAFE Act we need to get incorporated right now. It's being voted on soon. And so that's for to prevent horses being trucked to the Mexico and Canada borders for slaughter, to prevent that. So there are two on our radar right now in the political world right now. So yeah, if you get on there, we have an Act Now, and we also have the invite to our fundraiser too. So we have that. And then, the Utah people. Do you have to, yeah. So the Utah, I do have four Anakie horses. So we have a wild horse herd out here in Utah called the Anakies. So it's in the West Desert by the Pony Express Trail. And I got a call. Four Anakie horses had been rounded up, and they were in the government holding pens. And one was an orphaned horse, one was a young mother and a baby, and one was a senior horse, and her name's Giraffe. A lot of people know who Giraffe is. So Giraffe was rounded up once already out there in the wild, in this beautiful land, plenty of land out in the Utah desert, rounded up, brought to the holding pens. They sterilized her with, I think it was PCP at that time, and then they put her back out in the wild, all alone. Her herd actually ostracized her from the herd because she smelled funny. There was just something funky going on, you know? And so lead stallions would keep her away because they're protecting their herd. And they're like, is she sick? What's the deal? She's smelling super funky with that birth control stuff in her. So she was alone in the West Desert. And for a while there, a famous stallion named One Air kind of protected her for a while. And then the helicopters came in again and rounded her up again, which we have no idea why they did that. She's older and already been through so much trauma. And they brought her back to the holding pens in Delta, Utah. And that's when I got the call saying, please, will you please adopt Giraffe, because she doesn't want to live. She has no will to live. So we did get her. And when she got out of the trailer, it was really sad. She was really skinny. She'd given up on living. And now she's thriving at Wild Heart Sanctuary. And we also, in that same, a trailer came to our house. So a horse trailer brought him there from the Delta holding pens. So Giraffe got out of the trailer. Then the orphan named Leilani, she was just a tiny baby. Her mom was killed in the roundup. And then the Grace and Miss Bliss, they all got out at the same time. And so they've been there a little over 2 years, and they're all thriving. And it's really amazing to see how they've evolved, and they're super healthy. And they've all became a herd, like called the Wild Heart Herd, and they all have their own positions in the herd, like lead stallion, lieutenant stallion, lead mare, queen bee. You know, they all have in the support mare. So they've just emulated a wild herd in the wild. It's just cool how they do that.
And yeah. Will folks be able to see the horses at the concert?
Oh, yeah. So we'll have them by the fence line. Mm-hmm. And so they like to come and watch. So they just stand there with their heads over. Everyone will see them. Every year they watch the concert. Yeah, so I know. And it will be so fun. It will really be fun. And it's for a great cause. It's to take care of these horses so they can thrive and continue what we're doing at Wild Heart Sanctuary too.
Yeah, I saw tickets were about $88, and you got a handful left.
Yeah, we keep it pretty intimate and small. Mm-hmm. So we have a few tickets left. So we'd love you to hop on and wildheartsanctuary.com, and you can buy a ticket on there. And then, yeah, we keep it. And then you just bring your low back chairs, picnic, whatever beverage you prefer, and we just have a good old time. It's really fun. It is. Silver Creek. We're literally Park City. We're not like 100 miles away. People are like, Silver Creek. So we're right outside of Park City, not the Kimball Junction one, the Silver Creek one.
Anything else you want to mention, Sonia?
Yeah, I just want to mention whoever, any help we get and support, we are so grateful. We're a nonprofit that it totally is ran on donations only and volunteer. We don't collect salaries or anything. So we really appreciate anything you can do to support us. And we have volunteer programs, and the volunteers are fun, just a really fun tribe out there. And just thank you. I mean, I really appreciate you even letting me come here and talk about it, because my mantra is I'm going to be the horse's voice till my last breath. So anyway, I could talk about him, and this is a good way. So thank you.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you coming on. We've been speaking with Sonia Richens with the Wild Heart Sanctuary. I'll be right back with more after this. Now, getting back to some local news. Local water district officials are hopeful new federal legislation regulating non-flushable wipes will soon become law. KPCW's Christine Weller reports it floated through the U.S. House and now sits with the Senate.
Wastewater treatment plants across the country have had problems with flushable wipes backing up and breaking systems. The Wastewater Infrastructure Pollution Prevention and Environmental Safety Act was introduced to protect water systems and requires wipe products to include a "do not flush" label. The House passed legislation Tuesday requiring the words "do not flush" to be printed on all wipe containers. Now the bill awaits Senate approval. Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District Director Mike Lur said he's happy to see regulations. He said district plants have had big problems with so-called flushable wipes. Baby and body wipes can technically be flushed down the toilet, but he said they don't break down like toilet paper and can't be treated at plants.
They wrap around our pumps, they shut our system down and cause us tremendous problems and result in sewage backing up into homes and businesses. We have this big screen where the wastewater comes in the plant, and we remove entire whole body wipes by the hundreds every day.
Lur said the wipes have been a problem for the last 10 years, and passing legislation has been difficult.
Big wipe manufacturers, Procter & Gamble and others, really had a tremendous business, and they felt like they might have lower sales if you could not flush them. And we basically had to spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill, our industry, to really fight for this.
The bill now moves to the Senate for consideration, and Lur said he hopes it will pass. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In studio with me now, I've got Park City Mayor Nan Worrell. How's it going, Mayor?
It's going well. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, the council kicked off their meeting last night with a work session kind of recapping winter transportation. I know we saw a slight decline in ridership, but the transit department's really encouraged about this really strong increase in park and ride ridership. What'd you make of the numbers?
Oh, I'm thrilled with that. There was a lot of skepticism when we first decided to stand up the Richardson Flat park and ride that, you know, people wouldn't want to use it, because in some ways it's counterintuitive. If you get off of 40 instead of heading towards the resorts, you would head back the other way in order to get to the park and ride. But people discovered it, and I think the key was running on nonstop shuttles, excuse me, from the park and ride into each of the resorts. And people loved that because they could just get on there. Plus, we had the shoulder running bus lanes, so people could sit on the bus and wave at people that were sitting in traffic as they zipped by.
Yeah, and I know there was discussion about it potentially increasing the frequency on those during peak periods,
right,
but also some conversation around servicing that Park City Heights neighborhood. Where do you guys want to kind of look at going forward?
You know, we're not transportation planners. The council isn't, and so we look to staff for their expertise on that. It's very important to the council that Park City Heights have access to regular transit service. And one of the frustrations with the Deer Valley route was it would stop at the Old Town Transit Center on the way back out towards the park and ride from Deer Valley. And that added to people's trips. And they're like, why are we even getting off here? Why do we have to stop here? Because there wasn't a lot of people getting on and off at the Old Town Transit Center. And it added significantly to the route, especially during peak traffic. So we really would like to find a way that we can, you know, keep the efficiency of the Deer Valley route as well as serve Park City Heights. And so our transit transportation director, Tim Sanderson, who joined us a month or so ago, is doing a fabulous job. He's going to go back and look at it with his team and see what else could we possibly do to make sure that that neighborhood has access just like others do.
Yeah. Moving on, the council approved a design contract. I believe in stores I've been calling it the City Park Building, but I think community center is maybe the new better word for it. What can you tell people about this project that for slated for City Park?
This has been a long time coming, and our summer camp program has capacity of around 100 kids, and that's because of state regulations, state daycare regulations. And as any parent knows, that camp sells out in minutes as soon as it's advertised. And so we really want to be able to increase the capacity for that. The building that is there is aging and doesn't have ability to have any more capacity for our day camps or other programming. So we're looking at this as an opportunity to not only expand our day camps, but provide some community gathering space, some community recreation space right there in the middle of City Park, which is prime location, easy on the bus, easy for parents to drop off.
Yeah, and so this design contract, that sets the stage for someone to come back with kind of a plan, and then from there the council could decide how to move forward.
Right, we have some concepts right now, and that look pretty well. The square footage of it is pretty well baked, and but now it's the creative part, and I love to see the architects get to work and see exactly what is possible there.
Yeah, well, moving on, the big item on last night's agenda was obviously the budget. You know, to start, Mayor, why do you feel the city's budget is important? I know you really encouraged some public comment on it. Might not have met that goal, but I know you feel it's really important. Why is that?
I do. I think it's one of the most important things that our council does, and I've said that many times. I believe that the spending of public dollars is something that all residents need to pay attention to. Is I'm paying these taxes. How are they being spent? And are they being spent wisely? And how efficiently are they? The city has a history of budgeting very conservatively, and that served us very well when the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And so I'm proud of our budget team. They've worked a lot of hours to make this budget a possibility. We started actually the budget process in January, so we've been at this 6 months, and I know people are tired of hearing, oh, now we're talking about the budget again. But it's critical. Where are we spending our capital dollars? Where are we spending our operating dollars? You know, and people say, well, it really doesn't have a lot to do with me, but it does. When you look at the fee schedule, that if we charge a fee for parking fines, we charge a fee for building permits and that type of thing. And so that's all part of this process. And as I say, it's been a long process. The budget team has brought the council along every step of the way, and we've had an opportunity to have input every step of the way. So,
yeah, and when you look at this year's budget, what themes stick out to you? What specific line items do you think show, you know, where the city's priorities lie?
I think that this budget really reflects our commitment to public service. And how do we keep the high level of service that we do for a relatively small town? You know, we're 8,500 people, but we swell to 80,000, for example, during Sundance. And so we have to have the services to be able to accommodate that and to have that flux. Our residents demand a high level of service, as well they should. And so we want to make sure that our budget reflects that priority.
Yeah. Budget also included an increase for mayor and council. I know that affects, you know, whoever may hold that seat in the future. Why do you feel that's appropriate to raise that pay?
It was a cost of living increase.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When we looked at, we had I appointed a blue ribbon task force 2 years ago, I guess, to look at our salaries, whether the council salaries needed to be increased. We did that prior to the last council election. Because when you look at our council's compensation versus, say, Summit County Council's compensation, we're lower than they are. So this task force went in and looked at it and felt like it didn't need adjusting at that point in time. Yeah. So this was a cost of living.
Yeah, and there were also some other, you know, pay grade changes for staff as well. I knew that took a very long time or had a very comprehensive study to pair with that. Is that right?
We were thrilled with the results of that study, or the fact that that study was done, because the city, it's been years and years and years since we've had a professional study done of our wages. How competitive are they with other municipalities? How competitive are we with the private sector? Obviously, we want to be able to attract attract and retain the very best talent that we possibly can, and salary is part of that.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you wanted to mention from last night's meeting?
It was short.
It was pretty quick.
It was short. We were out before 8 o'clock, which is kind of a record for us. So.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to touch on next week. I know you guys have scheduled a special meeting, but also some specific time to tackle the 5 acres in Bonanza Park. What do you hope to get into next week? What should people know?
We are getting ready to put out a request for proposals for a developer for that area, but the council has to be able to answer some questions beforehand, because that's going to inform the RFP. You know, if we just throw it out there and say, what do you want to do with Bonanza Park, we'll get all sorts of stuff from a developer. So 2 weeks ago, the council had back-to-back meetings again so that we could spend some time really focusing on the five acres. And we tackled things like, do we want above ground or below ground parking? Mm-hmm. You know, and the council said our ideal would be to put the parking underground. We don't want to see big sprawling asphalt, you know, ground level, surface level parking lots around every building. You know, we talked about housing. How much housing do we want there? What do we want in terms of mixed use? And the groundwork that we did, but with the studies with the community, where we had community input, we had community meetings, we had surveys, and we had over a couple thousand responses to what people want to see there. And the bottom line is they want a place for locals. They want a place where locals can gather. They want mom and pop businesses there. They want to see some gathering space, you know, I hate to say open space, but green space or parks or plazas or something like that, where people can sit out in the sunshine or kids can make a snowman in the winter. And so that, also a home for the Kimball Art Center, you know, that was something that the council is interested in including them in that 5 acres. So, you know, there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered for the RFP before it can go out. So we are dedicating some time next week and doing 2 meetings next week. So one meeting on Thursday will focus on the small area plan, which the Planning Commission just forwarded a unanimous recommendation to the council to adopt. We'll focus on that as well as the 5 acre parcel. And then Friday we'll come back and do our regular agenda business.
Yeah, and I understand next week the council could see just some kind of different designs and concepts for that space, along with some more financial estimates. I wasn't here the last time this kind of district got the go around. I know you were. When you look back, you know, lessons learned, where in this kind of crunch time, where do you think the council really needs to be focused on in making these kind of important decisions on that land?
First and foremost, I think we need to look at the financial models, and they're coming, the consultants are coming back next week with three scenarios that the council, at least three scenarios that the council can take a look at and see how we're going to finance this. We didn't do that last time. And, you know, we kind of walked in with an open checkbook and said, okay, what do we want to do here? And it just, the amount kept growing and growing and growing. And, you know, I look at it very simply, like if I'm going to go out and buy a house, I figure out what my budget is before I start looking, and knowing I'm probably going to spend a little bit more than what I think my budget is. But I think that we need to be looking at it that same way as a city, is, you know, what can we afford there? And if we want to do things there that our budget doesn't afford, who can we partner with to make those happen?
Yeah. Finally, Mayor, I heard you're going to France next month.
I am.
You know, we're widely expected to get the 2034 Winter Games announcement. What does it mean for you in this moment to kind of represent the city? You know, what do you hope to rub off on what Park City, you know, kind of stands for?
I am thrilled to have the opportunity to go. I've not been to an Olympics either summer or winter, so this is all new to me. I'm like a kid in the candy store wanting to just experience. I want to see how it functions. How does the transportation system work? How does security work? And then we'll be in the room when the IOC votes on July 24th. And so I'm anxious to witness history on that day and actually be part of that. Park City has a seat at the table. Park City is very important to the games in 2034, and I'm looking forward to putting our best foot forward and making it a successful games.
No, it should be fascinating to see Paris, because it seems like they're going over quite quite the overhaul right now to set up for the games.
Yeah, yeah. I think their opening ceremony concept is interesting.
Down the Seine,
they're going to
yeah.
bring people, the teams in on boats yeah. and then let them off in the stadium to walk, do their walk around and then get back on their boats and continue up the river. So just watching the logistics of all of that, I think will be fascinating.
Yeah. Well, anything else you want to mention, Mayor?
I do want to mention that on July 24th, there's going to be a celebration here in Park City. We're coordinating with the Chamber of Commerce and Summit County and Utah Olympic Park, and we're going to have a celebration in that afternoon. So watch for details of that.
Okay, awesome. Looking forward to it. Well, thank you for coming on, and have a good weekend, Mayor.
Thank you. You too.
We've been speaking with Park City Mayor Nan Worrell about last night's City Council meeting. We'll be right back after this. As we just mentioned, ridership on Park City Transit declined this past ski season, but the transit department is encouraged by one emerging trend. There were 1.1 million riders on Park City Transit during winter 2023-24, that's December 10th through March 30th. The count includes all riders from fixed route bus service as well as micro transit, which Park City shut down in April. That's a 9% decline compared to the previous winter when Park City saw record snow totals and a surge in winter tourism. Despite the year-over-year dip, Park City Transit Director Tim Sanderson is encouraged about the 211% increase in park-and-ride usage. For the first time this past winter, the city ran direct buses to Park City Mountain and Deer Valley from Richardson Flats' 750-space park-and-ride lot near the Quinns Junction exit off U.S. Highway 40. Sanderson said they want to continue to encourage skiers and riders to take the bus into town rather than increasing vehicle traffic in the city core.
We're still figuring out how best to communicate to the public and visitors to Park City in order to encourage them, in order to use it. And so as we hone that message down and as more people try it and like it, which is what we're seeing, we think that number is going to grow substantially going into the next season.
Sanderson directly attributed the increase in park and ride utilization to Richardson Flat, which the 6 Silver bus continues to service this summer. Going into next winter, the transit director said he'd like buses to adjust to a 15-minute frequency during rush hour.
So instead of running 20-minute service all day long, we want to bump that up to 15-minute service during those areas of high peak demand, and then back it off to 30 minutes off peak. So same amount of bus hours that we're running, so it's a zero-cost item, but it does provide a better experience for our customers. We think that's going to have a pretty significant impact.
Park City Transit is free and runs a variety of buses throughout the summer. Route details and more information can be found at kpcw.org. The Park City School District got its first positive report card from federal officials monitoring its progress toward responding and resolving harassment and discrimination complaints. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on that.
The district signed a joint resolution agreement with the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights in March to resolve an investigation that found over 180 harassment incidents in the district. The agreement set steps the district must take to comply with federal laws, including reviewing harassment incidents from the 2022-23 school year, developing a standard reporting form, and revising Title IX policies and practices, which is now complete. During its investigation, the OCR found the district knew about alleged student-to-student sexual harassment in its schools. However, the Title IX coordinator, the staffer responsible for managing reports of sex-based discrimination, failed to tell students about support resources and their right to file a formal complaint. Further, the coordinator for the district told the federal agency she hadn't received any Title IX concerns. Under the district's revised rules, the Title IX coordinator job description has been changed and a new compliance flowchart clarifying procedural steps is in place. Superintendent Jill Gilday told the Board of Education Tuesday the OCR approved the changes. Next, Gilday said the district will submit data it's gathered on harassment incidents involving 29 students, along with new policies regarding harassment and the new reporting system for OCR review by June 24th. The new reporting system is already in use, and it has been used to submit new harassment and bullying complaints. Gilday said she has looked through some of the reports.
Some of the words that kids use are unkind and not nice, and we don't want to hear these kinds of words. And when we talk with parents, they say we don't speak this way at home. So we got to figure out the social impact of what kids are hearing, seeing.
Gilday said a lot of the unkind language is also shared on social media platforms, which has led to parent conversations with the district about a no cell phone policy. The district will also submit new training materials in July and educational materials for parents, teachers, and students in August. Gilday said a We All Belong campaign will be rolled out this fall as part of the parent, teacher, and student educational materials. The district also partnered with the Western Educational Equity Assistance Center to help with education.
And they will help to inform that ongoing education and training, especially at the different levels, because one of the requirements is like explain to a third grader what harassment and discrimination is. That's different than a 12th grader.
Also Tuesday, Gilday shared results from a Park City High School climate survey. It found 88% of students felt safe at school this year. An average of 83% of students felt safe in 2023, and 89% felt safe in 2021. But 58% of students this year reported all students felt welcome at the school, while 73% reported a sense of welcome in 2023, and 77% reported a sense of welcome in 2021. Board Vice President Wendy Crossland thought the 30% difference of students feeling safe versus feeling all students are welcome this year might be a perception issue. Gilday said changes in feelings of safety and a sense of welcome over the years are impacted by global, statewide, and local events.
So if there is a school shooting, you do all of a sudden see physical safety, we're worried. If you hear about a fight, all of a sudden physical safety, you're worried.
Gilday said there was one physical altercation at the high school this year, which could have impacted kids who witnessed or were involved in it. The district expects to be in full compliance with the terms of the OCR resolution by the summer of 2026. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
On the phone with me now, I've got Utah Highway Patrol Lieutenant and PIO Cameron Roden. How's it going, Cameron?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. So we've got you on to talk about a new road rage law that goes into effect statewide beginning July 1st. I thought we'd start, Cameron, with, you know, at the Highway Patrol, how do you all define road rage? You know, what behavior constitutes road rage?
Well, we've all seen it out there. We've all seen as we're driving down the road when people just let those emotions get the best of them and they start letting those behaviors start acting out in aggressive manners towards other people. So when individuals are out there driving any type of aggressive driving that are directed towards others, and it can be either a driver or a passenger too, it can be behaviors that are meant to intimidate other drivers. So that we're just trying to get people to realize that these events can escalate and transpire into really serious events like we've seen lately. We've seen way too many of these that have gone from just a basic mistake, driving mistake, and have escalated into something that could definitely have been prevented or stopped.
Yeah, and so I understand this law was passed by Todd Wheeler. He's a Republican from Woods Cross this past legislative session. What does this new law allow you all out on the roads patrolling patrolling our highways? What does this allow you to do in terms of prosecuting road rage or just, you know, more severe penalties?
Right. Yeah. This law has several different aspects to it. One, it does allow for increased penalties. So that was one thing that we Senator Wyler had talked about yesterday in our press event. Road rage isn't a new thing, and road rage isn't new that it's illegal because it has been illegal all along. Following too closely, extreme speeds, cutting people off, all of those things have been illegal already. That's what we see with road rage. But it gives officers the ability to enhance penalties now. Now that we're able to put this definition to road rage and we're able to actually start tracking it now to see how bad it is, now we can start putting enhanced penalties. So anything over a class B, if you have some type of a violation that's a class B, if you put the road rage enhancement, that enhances it one step. So if a class B would go to a class A could go to a third degree felony. So that does enhance those penalties for those. But it also adds some sanctions as far as a driver's license. On a first offense, if a judge feels that the offense was egregious enough, he can now order a driver's license suspension. So there are, and if we start to get repeat offenders, there's also more further driver's license sanctions that can be put into put into place so that we can make sure that we're getting these repeat offenders and really aggressive people off the road. It also adds a part where we can impound vehicles that are involved in road rage. So there's a lot of different sanctions that are with this new law to help us to really get people to realize that these have these situations have a lot of tragic things that can transpire. So we want them to really think about what's going on out there and think twice before letting their emotions get the best of them.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to cite some data from a recent KSL article I saw. They were citing numbers from the Utah Highway Patrol based on data collected from six of the department's main dispatch centers. It found that road rage in Utah has increased from a reported 565 incidents in 2020 to 747 last year. Emergency dispatchers are reporting alleged road rage is up 32% since 2020. You know, there was a got a lot of coverage of a situation in Lehigh in which a couple was kind of pushed by this truck for about 100 feet and what they were alleging was road rage. They seemed very shook. You know, if drivers are in a situation where they believe, you know, someone behind them is maybe going through a bit of road rage, you know, what tips can you offer in terms of just trying to diffuse the situation?
Yeah, because we've all been in there where we get behind the wheel, somebody's tailgating you, or somebody's, you know, doing things that are starting to get irritate you, or make it so that the situation's getting very dangerous. First of all, if something's going to cause a crash or an accident, or somebody's driving very aggressive, call 911. Let police know so that we can get in the area as quickly as possible, get this individual stopped, and handle the situation. We don't want individuals to try to handle these situations by themselves. Another thing is, don't retaliate, because any type of retaliation escalates the situation, but it also makes that person part of the problem now and actually could face charges or violations themselves. But if they're starting to be a targeted where someone's targeting you, following you, slow down, let the person go down the road. Don't try to follow them, especially if they're breaking law. We don't want individuals to break the law to try to follow somebody or to try to retaliate. So just be calm and just let that individual go down the road. If they're following you or something, get off the road where you can get to a police station or someplace safe where you can and get safe. But that big thing is call 911 as soon as you can so we can get law enforcement in the area and handle the situation.
Yeah, and not sure if you had any data on it, but are there, you know, specific areas where you tend to see more road rage? Like, is it more prevalent on the highways or is it more on you know, certain busy intersections or where you guys see a lot of that?
Road rage can really, it can really be anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's, like you had mentioned a little bit ago, with the six dispatch centers that are getting these calls now and starting to see more instances of road rage, that's one great thing about this new bill is it's allowing us to get better data, more information to help us track these situations. Whereas before, there was no type of formal definition, there was no violation that allowed us to track and see how bad of road rage really, really was. And so with the new law, we'll be able to track data, see how things are and what solutions are being put into place to help to mitigate road rage. And so with the increases we've seen, you know, we have to track different violations and see what things we see are spiking, whether that be, you know, assaults, whether it be traffic violations that are commonly associated with road rage, brandishings. So we have been trying to track these different things to see what areas are going up. And we have seen increases in a lot of different areas. So the new law will definitely help us to better track that and see how bad. We've seen a lot of serious cases in the last little bit, especially not just on the highway, some serious cases in Lehigh and in Clearfield that have turned very deadly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm almost out of time here, but no, it's a busy time of year on the road, summer travel season. Any tips you have for our listeners that are just traveling statewide this summer?
Yes, just be informed with road rage. And again, it's something that's really easy for us to get caught up in. And a lot of times from what we hear with offenders is I let my emotions get the best of me. We've got to keep our emotions in check so that we don't find ourselves in a situation where we regret that letting those emotions start to get the best of us. Know that, learn how to spot what could be transpire into road rage and then take the steps to mitigate that. We do have a campaign coming out. Part of the legislation is having an educational aspect, so people are going to start to see a lot of road rage videos on what these consequences of road rage are, but also some things about how we can stop it and things we can do to make sure that we get these situations stopped on the freeway.
All right. I'm out of time, Cameron. I appreciate you calling in and hope you have a good weekend.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Take care. We've been speaking with Utah Highway Patrol Lieutenant and PIO Cameron Roden about Utah's new road rage law. You've been listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Heads up for those in Old Town Park City tomorrow. Savor the Summit is happening on Main Street. That means the street will be shut down. Beginning at 6 a.m., parking will be removed from the east side of Main Street for deliveries and event setup. Then starting at noon tomorrow, Main Street will close entirely from top to bottom. The city is running buses every 20 minutes from Richardson Flat that has free parking. Those buses will run from 10 a.m. until midnight tomorrow. Parking in China Bridge will cost you $9 an hour, a max of $40, and those rates are from noon to 10 p.m. There's a variety of private paid lots you can find throughout Old Town. Taxi drop-off is the Bob Wells Plaza along with the Brew Pub lot. You can find more information about logistics for Savor the Summit at parkcity.org. I'm Parker Malatesta. Thanks for tuning in.